August 15, 1927, how all created things possess the unity of the divine will. Difference between the test of Adam and that of Abraham. I was going around through the whole creation according to my usual way, to unite myself to the acts of the supreme will, which it exercises in it. And my always lovable Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, "My daughter, all created things possess the unity of my divine fiat. While it is divided into many acts, these acts are bound together and inseparable from one another in the unity of the same divine will. Look at the sun, its light is an act distinct from the other created things, but its light binds all. It invests the earth and binds it with its light, and the earth binds itself to it, drinks in large gulps from the fount of light, receives its effects, its heat, its ardent kisses, and forms one single act with the sun. The light invests the air and becomes inseparable from it. It invests the water, and the water plunges into the light, and they bind themselves to each other in their unity. In sum, since one is the will that dominates them, all created things are so bound among themselves as to become inseparable, and one could not be without the other. Now, the soul who lives in my divine fiat possesses the unity of it, and therefore she is inseparable from all the acts which the unity of my will issues. The unity of it binds her to God, and she gives me the glory of the divine works. It binds her to the angels and to the saints, and she gives me the angelic glory and that of the saints. It binds her to all creation, and she gives me the glory of the heavens, of the sun, of the sea, in sum, of everything in which my will operates. She is inseparable from it and forms her unity with it. Therefore, only one who lives in my will can give me the love, the glory of all creation, and of all redemption. There is not one act of it from which the soul is separated. The other creatures might say it with words, but only one who lives in my volition possesses the deeds. Then I continued my round in the supreme volition, and since I had first offered the first acts of Adam when he possessed the unity with the supreme will, so that I too might unite myself to those perfect acts which he did at the beginning of creation, and then I had moved on to unite myself with the heroism of Abraham, I thought to myself, what divine wisdom! Of Adam it is only said that he was the first man created by God, that he sinned and cast the human family into the maze of all evils, and then nothing else is said about him in the many years he lived. Could our Lord not return to make some other test and ask of him some other sacrifice in order to test his faithfulness? And while Adam is put into oblivion, he calls Abraham, and after testing him and finding him faithful, he puts him on display, makes him the head of the generations, and he is spoken about with so much glory and honor. Now, while I was thinking of this, my sweet Jesus moved in my interior and told me, "My daughter, these are the dispositions of my infinite wisdom. It is my usual way that when I ask of the creature a small sacrifice for her good and, ungrateful, she denies it to me, I no longer want to trust her, I dismiss my designs to raise her to great things, and I leave her like a creature put into oblivion, which no one points to because of either great works or heroism, whether for God, for herself or for the peoples. Then, you must distinguish what I wanted from Adam, the little sacrifice of depriving himself of a fruit, and it was not granted to me. How could I trust him and ask of him a greater sacrifice? On the other hand, I did not ask of Abraham a fruit as sacrifice, but first I asked him to go into a foreign land in which he was not born, and he promptly obeyed me. And then I wanted to trust him more, a lavish grace upon him, and I asked of him the sacrifice of his only son, whom he loved more than himself, and he promptly sacrificed him to me. From this I knew he was up to it, and I could trust him, I could entrust everything to him. It can be said that he was the first repairer to whom the scepter of the future Messiah was entrusted, and therefore I raised him to head of the generations, to God's great honor, as well as his own and of the peoples. The same happens in all creatures. It is my usual way to ask for small sacrifices, depriving oneself of a pleasure, of a desire, of a small interest, of a vanity, or detaching oneself from something which seems to do one no harm. These small tests serve as little supports on which to place the great capital of my grace in order to dispose them to accept greater sacrifices. And when a soul is faithful to me in the small tests, then I abound in grace and ask for greater sacrifices, so as to be able to abound yet more in giving, and I make of her a portent of sanctity. How many sanctities begin from a small sacrifice? And how many, after denying me a small sacrifice, as it seemed to them that it was something of no importance, have remained scrawny and good, cretinous in comprehending it, weak in walking on the way that leads to heaven. Poor ones, they can be seen crawling and licking the earth in a way that arouses pity. Therefore, my daughter, it takes greater attention to small sacrifices than to great ones, because the small ones are the strength of the great, dispose God to give grace, and the soul to receive it.